evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. President Kiir fires his foreign minister and names a woman to replace him. And new protests break out in Sudan.
They are dealing with SPA as if it is the new government in Sudan. This is not true. SPA will remain as an independent body. It's true that it has very good links with the new government, but it will never be the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Kiir fired his foreign affairs minister, Niall Deng Niall, last night without explanation. The announcement was made on state radio. Kiir named Awut Deng Achil as Niall's replacement. A Juba-based political analyst says President Kiir could be trying to show that his administration values women with that move. Winnie Serino reports for VOA from Juba.
James Cook, a senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies, says he suspects Niall was removed from his ministerial position because he was scarcely in the capital in recent weeks and months and failed to consult directly with President Kiir.
He was absenting himself too much from Juba, and particularly from J1. And this might have created some suspicion from the president that Niall might be sympathizing with Dick Toriak and maybe with those the president is not in good book with. And that could have also given the president courage to utilize the local politics of the former Warabi states, particularly those who are opposed to Niall, and then President comes out clearly to grant some of their demands.
Okuk says Niall failed to put the Foreign Affairs Ministry on the right track after the country's image was tarnished by the conflict. He says Niall decided on his own to close strategic missions in France, Norway, Kuwait and Israel and dismissed several diplomats who were working outside the country, forcing many to become asylum seekers in the countries to which they were assigned. Okuk says that caused misunderstandings between several Western countries and the Kiir administration. Okuk says Awut's appointment also shows Mr. Kiir is trying to show that women make important contributions in his administration.
And the fact that Awut is the first lady to occupy that position as a full minister of foreign affairs could be also a move from Kiir to tell women and to tell the world that is sympathetic with the women of South Sudan that his administration value women and is ready to give them a higher position in the government.
Awut is seen as one of Kiir's strongest supporters who represented him at the IGAD-led peace talks leading to last year's revitalized peace agreement. Okuk says Awut will gain more respect if she manages to reform the Ministry of Foreign Affairs at the headquarters in Juba and the embassies abroad, as well as assign competent people to serve in embassies, unlike previous foreign affairs ministers who were accused of supporting cronyism. Rhea Williams, executive director of the NGO Crown the Woman, says she is glad to see more women being appointed to top positions, but wants to see more women leaders appointed to high-ranking government positions.
I'm happy to see women being upgraded to higher positions. I'm happy to see Awut in that position. And I would want to say that we, as South Sudanese women, we expect a lot from them. And also, I would want to ask the government that we should always include fresh blood as well.
Jacqueline Nasiwa, National Director for the Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice, says it's good to see a woman appointed to a key position in government. As Foreign Affairs Minister, Achil will head the National Security Council, which is comprised of the Ministries of Defense, Finance, Justice and Foreign Affairs, Nasiwa says with a woman leading such a powerful committee, she expects women's rights to be addressed.
I think having a female minister in foreign affairs sitting in that committee will help to elevate the needs of women and their priorities, especially in regards to their protection and security. And therefore, this is a big task, not only to hold the position, but to ensure that women issues are really, really brought on the table and the protection and safety of women become key priority for the national security agenda.
Nasiwa says a handful of South Sudanese women head foreign embassies, and she expects Achuil to promote more women to become ambassadors to improve diplomatic relations with other countries. Prior to joining politics, from 2000 to 2002, Achuil traveled the world advocating for peace efforts in South Sudan to various world leaders. She was awarded the 2002 Interaction Humanitarian Award for her efforts for peace. Achuil participated in the peace talks in Kenya from 2002 to 2004, which led to the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005. From 2005 to 2010, she served on the Southern Sudan Legislative Assembly in Juba and was South Sudan's Minister for Labour and Public Service from 2009 to 2010. Achuil had been serving as Minister for Gender, Child and Social Welfare as part of the Transitional Government of National Unity, formed in April 2016, and served as MP since 2005. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
During World Humanitarian Day yesterday, a top UN official in South Sudan said more must be done to support female humanitarian workers and combat the inequalities reinforced by 5.5 years of fighting, which has led to unique risks for women and girls. The UN's humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan says women humanitarians put their personal safety at risk every day. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA News from Juba.
The UN says more than 100 humanitarian workers have been killed in South Sudan since the conflict erupted in 2013. Alan Naudejo, the UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says the work environment for humanitarian workers have been relatively good since last year's peace deal.
We are grateful that during the year 2013 so far, we have not experienced any loss of life in the humanitarian community. I hope the improved security situation in the country will continue to hold to allow people to start to rebuild their lives.
Susan Pascal, director for the Juba-based Women Advancement Organization, says women working as humanitarians in South Sudan have an uphill battle.
When we try to reach our community at the grassroots level, it's a very big challenge. Sometimes you have to swim in the swampy area. Sometimes you have to go where even there is a lot of fight.
Pascal says female humanitarians like herself often have to walk long distances on foot to reach affected communities, which increases the risk of sexual abuse or worse. The focus of this year's World Humanitarian Day is on women humanitarians like Pascal, who must leave behind their children and other loved ones to travel hundreds of kilometers, mostly on bad roads, to deliver humanitarian aid. She says being away for long stretches of time has taken its toll on her family.
I was in Fangak for 2 months, in Fangak, trying to implement activities where there was too much rain, and I could not access where there's not even communication, any source of communication. As I was struggling there to wait for the rain to stop a bit so that the Nile can go down, we used a canoe to cross the river. By then, my son, the only child I have, is in Uganda. He became sick and very sick and like a mad person, moving around and beating and words and destroying things and a lot of things in the school. And the school was there, you looking for me. They could not access me. When I came, I went to Uganda, I found my son a different person. He's already in his teenage age. And my son, I didn't know my son had joined bad group.
Now, Dehu says only 40 out of 240 national NGOs operating in South Sudan were founded by women, even though women make up 40% of the humanitarian workforce worldwide. He says, in South Sudan, women are often victims of discrimination and sexual violence while they are delivering much-needed humanitarian services.
Women in South Sudan play a vital role in every aspect of our humanitarian response. They make decisions about the delivery of assistance. They coordinate groups of actors providing protections and social services. Women also provide shelter. They prepare and distribute food. They set up school to educate children. And they provide other women with a safe space to talk about issues related to gender-based violence. Women often get to the people that most of the people cannot get to.
Manasseh Lomole Waya, chairperson of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, thanked all humanitarian workers for the sacrifices they make serving South Sudanese communities.
On this World Humanitarian Day, the people of South Sudan are all morally obliged to say thank you for all that you have done to keep our people served, particularly in the relief work and development initiatives. We're all aware that members of the humanitarian organizations work under difficult conditions, risking their lives. In South Sudan, for instance, it is a record that since 2013, we've lost 112.
Activists at yesterday's World Humanitarian Day commemoration in Juba called for the respect of all humanitarian workers, including women, and the need to end all forms of harassment directed at women. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
New protests have broken out in Sudan's capital, but this time outside the Sudanese Professionals Association. The protests involve SPA, a labor union which played a central role in negotiating a power-sharing deal between the military and opposition. Some opposition members say they are unhappy with a lack of transparency from the SPA. In Khartoum, VOA's Esha Sarai has more.
The Sudanese Professionals Association, or SPA, was one of the leading voices in the Forces of Freedom and Change Coalition, the opposition group that negotiated terms for a transitional government with military leaders who seized power in April. But after the formal signing of the agreement last weekend, small protests from opposition supporters have continued outside SPA headquarters. One of the protesters, Nahid Bustami, says she doesn't feel the SPA has been transparent about its negotiations for the political agreement. Bustami says that when the revolution began, the SPA was very clear in their communications with supporters about what was happening. But she says that since the negotiations started, she doesn't think the SPA is clearly communicating what is going on. Bustami and other protesters, like Ghazi Al-Raya, say they feel that the SPA has strayed from their mission to be a politically neutral labor union.
We are demanding that they pay attention and work on their main mission, which was working on making strong unions and civil services.
Additionally, many protesters have been pushing the SPA to fight for the punishment of military leaders presumed responsible for the killing of over 100 protesters in June, as well as tracking down a dozen protesters who remain missing. But Naji Al-Assam, a member of SPA's secretariat who has become the young public face of the organization, says protesters are conflating the SPA's responsibilities with those of the new government.
They are dealing with SPA as if it is the new government in Sudan. This is not true. SPA will remain as an independent body. It's true that it has very good links with the new government, but it will never be the government.
Still, an SPA spokesman and member of Sudan's doctor syndicate, Amjad Farid, says that the union welcomes the protests.
We have several protests in front of the headquarters of the Sudanese Professional Association, and we don't think this is a bad thing. The Sudanese people are practicing their rights to make the political entities and the entities that are engaged in the political process accountable to their demands.
And to make good on his encouragement of the protests, Farid and other members of the SPA often answer them by meeting demonstrators directly, taking questions from them and making note of their demands. Esha Sarai, VOA News, Khartoum.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The WHO praises new treatments announced to fight Ebola, but says other factors remain an obstacle. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Tell us one of your favorite proverbs and what it means.
Two eyes are better than one. I like it a lot because it tells you that when two people do something, there will be good results.
Never scratch your brother's back with a knife when facing a known situation. This simply means when you have a problem, instead of us looking at the problem as one people, we are dividing ourselves. You are fighting your brother and then the enemy who is coming from somewhere.
And basically it means that a banana yields well when you take good care of it. Mostly people use it for men who don't take care of their wives, and you just go out there, you want a ready-made thing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we are talking about Ebola treatments. The World Health Organization is embracing new treatments for Ebola as positive signs in efforts to tackle the epidemic in the neighboring Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but says other factors, including community engagement, remain crucial in stopping the spread of the deadly disease. Lisa Schlein has this report from Geneva.
Rigorous clinical trials of four treatments for Ebola show that two of them vastly improve the chances of survival. The World Health Organization says the use of Regen-EB3 and MAB-114 provide an effective treatment for people infected with the deadly virus. WHO calls this positive news as it provides healthcare workers with a new tool in the fight against Ebola. But WHO spokesman Christian Lindmeier cautions these new remedies alone will not stop Ebola.
What will stop Ebola under the leadership of the government in the DRC is good surveillance, good infection prevention and control, good community engagement, and excellent vaccination. So, of course, the human factor is a very important factor here. And the use of these therapeutics and the vaccinations in the most effective way possible.
The latest figures reported by WHO put the number of Ebola cases at 2,831, including nearly 1,900 deaths. The WHO is hopeful the new treatments will greatly reduce the number of people currently dying from the virus. Lindmeier says people who seek treatment soon after they become sick have the greatest chance of survival. He says it is important to come in the first 3 days.
That is saving lives, and that's clearly proven to save lives. Therefore, all efforts go into making people aware to come as early as possible, because it literally shows you with mortality rates between 6 and 11% that there's 90% chance of survival, whereas if you come late or don't look for treatment at all, there's a 90% chance of death.
Ebola lives in the forest, so it is unlikely the disease can be eradicated. WHO, however, says the new tools make it more possible to keep the virus in check. WHO says everyone must be made aware of the risks so they know what to do to save their lives. It says the best possible results will be achieved if people at high risk of Ebola are vaccinated and those who are infected are treated at an early stage. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
During International Youth Week last week, South Sudanese youth activists asked the government to invest more in job creation and to provide technical and higher education opportunities for young people across the country. The government has allocated £1 billion South Sudanese pounds for youth in the proposed 2019-2020 fiscal year budget, as we hear from Ding Madak in Juba.
Wani Michael, Executive Director for the non-profit OK Africa Foundation, says the government should increase funding for youth, and part of the money should go towards building polytechnics institutions in Juba, Wau and Malakal, a concept that was already approved by Parliament but never implemented.
So we are asking, what happened to this resolution? And we have been telling Parliament to ask on our behalf. We want to get answers from the Cabinet. Or what happened to this resolution of Parliament that was passed by Parliament for the establishment of National Museum and for the establishment of 3 polytechnics that will be able to build and train young people in terms of skills?
John Jude Chol works with the Greater Barghazal Youth Union and is a third-year student at the University of Juba's College of Medicine. Chol says the 1 billion South Sudanese pounds allocated to youth in the proposed budget will only pay for salaries of the Department of Youth at the Ministry of Culture, Youth and Sports. He says some of the country's oil revenue should go towards investing in the nation's youth.
When you look at this money, it will also not be enough to make youth investment through creation of centers like sports centers, the recreational centers for the youth, and other investment forms like the TVET, the technical education for the youth themselves will never be there, because this 1 billion will be used for salaries to the staff in the ministry, and now youth will be left out.
28-year-old Victor Michael, a resident from Juba, doubts that the proposed fiscal budget will be sufficient to empower young people across the country.
At the grassroots, the youths are suffering. We are the ones suffering in the war fronts. We are the ones suffering in the poverty level. So we don't see anything good, really. So what I will say is that the youths are the cornerstone of any development in any country.
Michael says addressing the needs of youth is the solution to solving many of South Sudan's problems, just as it is in other countries around the world. 32-year-old Nunu Diana, a student at the University of Juba, says the government should create programs that engage young people.
Youths are not being empowered in this country. We all know that free education is not yet guaranteed in the country.
Darwai Maborteng, head of the Young Parliamentarians Caucus in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says his group has asked the Committee on Culture and Youth and Sports to increase youth funding to 10 billion South Sudanese pounds in the proposed 2019-2020 fiscal year budget.
I'm actually calling this parliament in the third reading that it will be a cross-cutting of 10% from all the spending agent for youth development fund, especially from 175 barrels, at least 3% must be deducted from them, from that budget of the petroleum, of the oil production for the youth fund.
Kwach Wek Wall, the undersecretary in South Sudan's Culture, Youth and Sports Ministry, says the money allocated in the proposed budget will fund development of youth programs, pay for the second National Youth Union Convention, and sponsor young people to take part in upcoming regional sports competitions in Morocco.
We are now working on the youth development policy for the Republic of South Sudan, and is at its stage, at the final stages at the National Assembly, to be produced very soon. When it is out, it is a framework that is going to address the thematic areas of youth development and empowerment.
The government allocated 47 million South Sudanese pounds for youth in the current 2018-2019 fiscal year budget. For VOA News, I am Dingma Gott in Juba.
Finally, we take a closer look at the problems facing albinos and what one man did to overcome some of those problems. Growing up with albinism, 24-year-old Alan Herbert, a Kenyan journalism graduate, knew he was different. While he did not experience the same stigmatism and discrimination of his peers living with albinism, he had to be shielded from the sun. It's this special treatment and media stories of the brutal attacks suffered against albinos that made Herbert start a football team, his way of helping people with the genetic disorder fight for their space in Kenya. This past weekend, the team won its debut match in what Herbert says he hopes is a first of many. Sarah Kamani has the story.
On a cloudy Saturday morning, 24-year-old Alan Herbert, founder and team captain of Black Albinism Football Club, Kenya's first football team made up entirely of young people living with albinism, prepares for a football match with his team.
Bella! 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 Bella!
In a country where people living with albinism are still stigmatized, this is no ordinary team or match.
Football brings people of different diversities together. And when we decided a sport, we said football is the easiest. And actually, it's also in the Kenyan curriculum, so people relate with football a little bit easier.
Across East Africa, people with albinism have been targeted in brutal ritual killings for their body parts to be used in witchcraft, mainly due to their white skin, a condition that is caused by lack of pigmentation. Isaac Maura, a senator in Kenya, has been campaigning for the rights of people with albinism. He is Kenya's first and only lawmaker living with albinism.
Because people with albinism really suffer. They are black but not black enough, white but not white enough, disabled but not disabled enough. So we are caught in between it. And when we're caught in between it, we don't quite belong. So we have to self-define. These are self-definition activities.
In their debut match, the six-month-old team carries the day 4-2 in a penalty shootout.
Once we fight the discrimination, once we beat off the stigmatization, then you can see the greatness that is in us. You have realized here how we've won. Yeah, we've won fair and square.
As the match comes to an end and Herbert celebrates with his teammates, the Jandism graduate says there is no turning back on the dream of one day playing in the Kenyan Premier League and hopefully representing his country on the international stage.
We are not different in any way. The only thing that we have, that our skin is a little bit pale and we have issues with our eyesight, but that does not make us less of people.
For now, it's time to revel in the first win. Sarah Kemani for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mr. President by African China.
My girl, my them go show in face for crime fighter. Rich man, waste his money, oh man, we now they see their face for crime fighter. Tell me something I don't know why. Rich man go they a la kwea. One man go they shan. Rich man go they a la kwea. One man go they shan. They gonna lead us well. Don't let this nation to fall inside well. Mr. President,
lead us well.
If you be governor,
govern us well.
If you be senator,
anytime well.
If you be police
well, well. Now they take bribe,
they are
lead us well.
People no get light. Everybody just they allah. When not they now how we want survive. Many youth ready for work, but as work not they now how we want survive. We will be giant of Africa, but go get visa enter Ghana now. Yeah, my God, policeman go see white. He go tell you say I say that thing. Now red, tell me something I do to make on a lead us well. Don't let this nation to fall inside well. Mr. President,
lead us well.
We've been listening to African China with the song Mr. President. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for joining us. We hope you tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Why you they make us they live in pain? Make on and lead us well. No let this nation to fall inside well. Mr. President,
lead us well.
If you be governor,
govern us well.
If you be